Welcome to day 130 of our 180-day study of the Westminster Standards. Today it looks like we're going to finish up Westminster Confession of Faith chapter 24 on marriage and divorce, and that'll finish up our study of the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Section 4 of chapter 24 of marriage and divorce in the Confession of Faith says, marriage ought not to be within the degrees of consanguinity or affinity forbidden by the word, nor can such incestuous marriages ever be made lawful by any law of man or consent of parties, so as those persons may live together as man and wife. The man may not marry any of his wife's kindred nearer in blood than he may of his own, nor the woman of her husband's kindred nearer in blood than of her own. Okay, the first phrase is, marriage ought not to be within the degrees of consanguinity or affinity forbidden by the word. The proof texts are from Leviticus 18, the whole chapter, not printed in our edition. You'll have to look that up on your own. 1 Corinthians 5:1. It is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. And Amos 2:7, that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek, and a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. Second, nor can such incestuous marriages ever be made lawful by any law of man or consent of parties, so as those persons may live together as man and wife. Mark 6:18, for John had said unto Herod, it is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife. And Leviticus 18:24, defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you, and the land is defiled. Therefore I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land itself vomiteth out her inhabitants. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, neither any of your own nation, nor any stranger that sojourneth among you. For all these abominations have the men of the land done, which were before you, and the land is defiled, that the land spew not you out also, when you defile it, as it spewed out the nations that were before you. So, once again, underscoring the fact that the degrees of consanguinity or affinity forbidden by the word in Leviticus 18 were forbidden to all people and not just Israel. Finally, the man may not marry any of his wife's kindred nearer in blood than he may of his own, nor the woman of her husband's kindred nearer in blood than of her own. Leviticus 20:19-21. And thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy mother's sister, nor of thy father's sister, for he uncovereth his near kin, they shall bear their iniquity. And if a man shall lie with his uncle's wife, he has uncovered his uncle's nakedness, they shall bear their sin, they shall die childless. And if a man shall take his brother's wife, it is an unclean thing, he hath uncovered his brother's nakedness, they shall be childless. Section 5 of chapter 24 of the Confession of Faith. Adultery or fornication committed after a contract, being detected before marriage, gives just occasion to the innocent party to dissolve that contract. In the case of adultery after marriage, it is lawful for the innocent party to sue out a divorce and after the divorce to marry another, as if the offending party were dead. Okay, the first phrase, adultery or fornication committed after a contract being detected before marriage gives occasion, just occasion, to the innocent party to dissolve that contract. Matthew 1:18-20, the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise, when as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph, before they came together she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man, and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived of her is of the Holy Ghost. Second, in the case of adultery after marriage, it is lawful for the innocent party to sue out a divorce, and after the divorce, to marry another, as if the offending party were dead. The phrase, after the divorce, is proof text by Matthew 5:31, It hath been said, Whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. Then finally, to marry another, that is to say, in the case of adultery after marriage, it is lawful for the innocent party to sue out a divorce, and after the divorce to marry another, as if the offending party were dead. Matthew 19:9. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her, which is put away, doth commit adultery. Romans 7:2. For the woman which hath a husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then if, while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. Finally, section 6 of chapter 24. Although the corruption of man be such as is apt to study arguments unduly to put asunder those whom God has joined together in marriage, yet nothing but adultery or such willful desertion as can no way be remedied by the church or civil magistrate is cause sufficient of dissolving the bond of marriage, wherein a public and orderly course of proceeding is to be observed, and the persons concerned in it not left to their own wills and discretion in their own case. Okay, the first phrase, nothing but adultery or such willful desertion as can no way be remedied by the church or civil magistrate is cause sufficient of dissolving the bond of marriage. Matthew 19:8, he saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery. 1 Corinthians 7:15, But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God hath called us unto peace. And finally, Matthew 19:6, Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What God therefore hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Then the second phrase, in the case of dissolving the bond of marriage, a public and orderly course of proceeding is to be observed, and the persons concerned in it not left to their own wills and discretion in their own case. Deuteronomy 24 is the proof text, which Jesus just said was what Moses allowed because of the hardness of their hearts. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement, and give it in her hand, and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her, and write her a bill of divorcement, and giveth it in her hand, and sendeth her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife, after that she is defiled. For that is abomination before the Lord. And thou shalt not cause the land to sin, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. Well, a great deal that could be said about these. If you're interested in conversation about the issues, please leave your comment or question on the blog. That's the end of today's lesson. There are some additional references there that I would recommend. And also, another interesting current event that bears on yesterday's readings and study, and that is the claim in Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 24, section 3, that those who profess the true Reformed religion should not marry with infidels. And the question is, what is an infidel? And that's an interesting question because for two reasons. One, the marriage is an oath, and this has to do with oaths. And also, there was a recent case in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in which an atheist sued. And this is the atheist who tried to get the under God taken out of the Pledge of Allegiance, and also in God We Trust taken off coins. And his lawsuit, which was first, several years ago, accepted and ruled in his favor, that the court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, ruled that the phrase "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional, was quickly reversed, and now the court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, has finally, it looks like finally, dismissed this one man's case. However, it is a very interesting ruling. And the court relies on an opinion that was handed down maybe 30 or 40 years ago. And atheists 40 years ago, following the court's trend on the idea of the separation of church and state, very logically and very legally and appropriately, given the assumptions that the Supreme Court has been handed down on separation of church and state, which really means the separation of God and state, said, we don't think that the government should allow people to say an oath that ends with the words, "So help me God." We think the "In God We Trust," the national motto, is an establishment of religion and should be removed from coins. Now, if the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals had been logical and had been consistent with what the Supreme Court has said, they would have agreed with the atheist. But that would have been a firestorm of controversy. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals 40 years ago was not as liberal, as progressive, as secular as the Ninth Circuit Court has become more recently, certainly as reflected in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judgment just a few years ago in favor of the atheist on the issue of the Pledge of Allegiance. What the court told the atheists, and I think this is because the court was unwilling to face the logical implications of the current doctrine of separation of church and state, what the court told the atheists was that the phrase "under God," or "So help me God," or the national motto "In God We Trust," has nothing to do with the God of the Bible. It has no theological meaning. It is simply a patriotic slogan. It's designed to increase people's faith in the state. Now, the couple of those phrases are directly out of the court's opinion. Patriotic and not being theological. They said it was not religious. The word God was not religious. And so they said to the atheist, it doesn't violate the separation of church and state because it has nothing to do with religion. And the court said these examples of patriotic slogans are what we call ceremonial deism. Ceremonial deism. So they denied the request of the atheists, and they said, this has nothing to do with God, this has nothing to do with real religion, this is just ceremonial deism. Well, that's interesting, because the United States Supreme Court, back when America was still a Christian nation, back in 1844, before the modern myth of the separation of church and state was invented, the court said that deism was a form of infidelity, and therefore a deist was an infidel. And now we have the court saying that anybody who takes the oath and says, "So help me God," or takes the Pledge of Allegiance and says, "Under God," or in any way recites the national motto, "In God We Trust," is just engaged in ceremonial deism, and logically is therefore an infidel, unless they qualify that by specifically saying, oh, I meant the God of the Bible. I meant Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Well, I suspect that Christians back in 1844 or earlier would look at today's Christians, and certainly most Americans today, and say, well, they're just a bunch of infidels. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. You can look at the links there, check out the early the words of the Supreme Court in 1844, then the opinion of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco more recently, and their declaration that the words God does not have any theological meaning, and some other links there that might entertain you if you're interested in this issue of deism, ceremonial deism, and who an infidel is, that those who profess the true Reformed religion should not marry. I think we'll be starting the Eighth Commandment tomorrow on day 131.